The views expressed in this podcast are solely our own. This information is provided for your convenience. It does not constitute legal advice, nor does it create an attorney-client relationship. Prior results do not guarantee similar outcomes. This is attorney advertising. Enjoy. Hi, welcome again to Red Flags Rising. My name is Mike Hunneke. I'm a partner at Morgan Lewis in the International Trade and National Security Practice. With me yet again is my good friend Brent Carlson of Red Flags Rising Solutions, LLC. Today is Thursday, November 6th, 2025, just after 7 p.m. U.S. Eastern Time. Brent, I hope you had a good Halloween. Good to see you as always.
Thanks, Mike. My Halloween costume was the high probability standard and hopefully didn't scare anybody out there, but it actually brought some sense of safety on a spooky night.
Well, Brent, we usually don't look to Broadway for inspiration for podcast episodes, especially not podcast episodes about United States export controls. But recently, new life was breathed into the classic Samuel Beckett play, Waiting for Godot, in which they cast Bill and Ted from Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure. That's right, Keanu Reeves and Alex Winter to play the famous characters in that play.
No way.
Way. These righteous dudes are breathing new life into that playbook. It's fitting, I think, that you and I are continuing to breathe new life into the high probability standard as something that really can be excellent and help people.
Twists and turns are a bummer. The high probability standard is the solution, is the way out.
In that play, they're waiting for 2 days for someone to appear who never does. They're hoping that that person would provide answers, but because the person never appears, they don't feel that they have answers. The application to export controls is that while we're waiting for some clarity, we already know what we need to know in order to set our own path. Samuel Beckett's play is famous for the many interpretations that it invites its audience to make. In a way, and maybe we're stretching just a bit here, Brent, but the high probability standard under U.S. export controls is very similar. While we're waiting for some clarity, we already know what we need to know in order to set our own path. Brent, especially in light of the affiliates rule, there's a lot of similar soul-searching and frustration, exasperation and fatigue within a lot of people in trade compliance for good reason. There's so much activity that's going on right now. It's a one-way ratchet. Every week, every month, there's a new obligation on them. Instead of waiting for someone who's never going to come, we already have a framework, the high probability standard, which is part of the full definition of knowledge. Now, it's a challenge because it allows the government to impose fines and penalties without having to prove up actual knowledge. So it's a bit of a force multiplier for them. But in an unusual way, especially for U.S. federal regulations, it can be a very forgiving standard that offers a bit of grace and repose to trade compliance officers who are willing to lean into it. It gives you the empowerment to determine for yourself what is the meaning of your risk. How do you calibrate your time, your resources, your effort towards mitigating your highest risks? There's no need to wait for someone to appear the next day. The standard is already here and it's existed since 1996. It's just a matter of realizing it's there and that it's really you who are empowered to use it to find a solution that fits you and fits your company rather than waiting for someone to tell you how to use it. The high probability standard is the foundational principle on which to make the really difficult subjective judgments that one has to make in trade compliance, always based on massively imperfect information.
Well, that's exactly it. I like this idea of waiting for Godot because recently there's been a lot of twists and turns, even more so over the last week in the export controls world than we've seen over the last year, over the last couple of years for that matter. What was really driving this recent compliance whipsaw effect is that affiliates rule, aka the 50% rule, that came on strong at the end of September. It was announced and effective September 29th. It set a lot of teams scrambling to catch up with it and get their arms around it, even though it had been anticipated for some time. There are teams that were working around the clock to do that and understand where that risk and exposure was. We have a couple of podcast episodes where we talk about it, episode 28 and 29 for listeners out there. If you haven't heard those already, go check them out or check them out again because they may offer some insights. But then we had on last week, it was actually a week ago today on October 30th, as part of the trade negotiations between the United States and China, President Trump decided to put a pause on the affiliates rule for 1 year starting on November 10th. It was officially announced on November 1st from the White House. This compliance whipsaw effect is creating, in some circles, dangerous misunderstanding where basically it's like, oh, okay, so we're good to go on export controls. We don't have to worry about this. Some, they're like, okay, it's a welcome pause because they got time where they can actually devote the right resources and putting the right people, processes, and technologies in place to do this. We're in this situation where even though the affiliates rule has been put on pause or will be put on pause effective November 10th, the key issue out there is that the affiliates rule itself had no impact on pre-existing BIS anti-diversion regulations, and neither does its suspension. So in the background in all this, where BIS has been stepping up enforcement actions from outreach visits to administrative subpoenas to full-on investigations, there's just a lot of activity out there. We had a recent nine-figure corporate resolution at the end of July, which was all about that high probability standard, that full definition of knowledge under the export administration regulations. We're in a sort of a funky time where, in one sense, a lot of folks are waiting for Godot in that sense of we want some clarity. But also, you've got really a sleeper tidal wave of enforcement activity that's going on in the background that is about to hit a bunch of people that is going to take them by surprise unless they're really ready for it. That sounds like a Dr. Doom statement, but the point in this is understanding the risks so you can get your arms around them and take the appropriate action ahead of time. That's one of the reasons why I always point this out. No matter where somebody is or where companies are on that spectrum in terms of how they're reacting to the affiliates rule or the latest news around it, they're either now taking a measured approach in terms of how they're going to get their arms around it in terms of the right people, process and technology, or they're just blowing it off and they're saying, okay, that's not a big problem whatsoever. Or, and here's the bigger danger within companies, where it's like the legal and compliance teams may take this as a welcome respite and gives them some breathing space to do this, but there may be other parts in the enterprise that just may think, oh, we're free to go. This is what we've talked about with the collective knowledge doctrine, where you could have some people in the organization just not getting the memo and out there running and gunning without some grounding compliance for principles. Seize control with your own compliance clarity and your own destiny and for the company itself in terms of export controls compliance.
This is really, for a lot of people, very emotional and not in a disparaging way, right? I mean, people have been spending a huge amount of nights, weekends, money, time away from families, time away from other tasks that until September 29th were, you know, burning brush fires themselves, trying to get their arms around the affiliates rule, trying to decide in the cases where you have inconsistent information, even across due diligence vendors outside of China. And maybe you have 100% ownership reported by both of them, but what if they're different? And what if they're different in ways that could be relevant to whether the affiliates rule did or didn't apply? There's already a lot of burnout and stress in this community. They didn't need another experience like this, to be sure. So how do you protect yourself from something like this? What are some, I hate to say it, coping mechanisms?
Right.
A very good framework that you've been pressing and articulating out there very clearly is useful because, one, I think it's absolutely correct the way you're describing the regulations and how they work, but two, because it's also a way out of this. It's a way to deal with this. It's a way to prepare if there's an unexpected snapback of this affiliates rule, whether it's a year from now or otherwise. That point that you've been making, Brent, is this didn't actually change the anti-diversion regulations within the EAR, the Export Administration Regulations. And when you and I say anti-diversion regulations, what we're talking about is really a suite of different enforcement tools that the government has had for decades to stop and, if necessary, fine, penalize, prosecute diversion. One that gets a lot of attention is General Prohibition 10. There are a series of general prohibitions. There are 10 of them. The 10th one is what I like to call the catch-all of all catch-alls because it makes it a violation of the EAR to be aware of a past, present, or future violation of the EAR and do anything related to that transaction or that export, including financing, servicing, support of any kind. This is an extremely broad regulation. It was used in the July 28th settlement agreement that you mentioned that resulted in $140 million penalty from both the DOJ and BIS combined. Another anti-diversion mechanism that's in there are really the several mechanisms that are in part of the AR that provides BIS with the ability to fine and penalize inchoate offenses, INCH OATE, not fully formed. Although they are in themselves full offenses, they are really for situations where either there was an attempt at a violation of the export controls that failed, or practically speaking, where BIS can't prove up the full violation, but they can prove something going up to it. This is the story that white-collar lawyers tell their kids at night before they go to sleep. Remember, son or daughter, it's not the crime itself that's going to get you in trouble. It's the cover-up. What is the cover-up? What does that look like? It's aiding and abetting. It's causing a violation. It's conspiracy to violate. It's making material misrepresentations. It's evasion. It's acting with knowledge of a violation. That too is something BIS used very aggressively and creatively in the July 28th $140 million settlement. So even where there might be a strict liability offense where BIS would not even have to prove knowledge, in a way, it's almost easier for them to use some of these inchoate provisions so that they don't have to show that the full violation occurred. Stepping back, the way to prevent this emotional and professional roller coaster from impacting everyone the way that it has over the last 2 months since September 29th is to not overly emphasize it. It's not really what's driving your risk. It's these other provisions of the EAR that all turn on awareness and knowledge that we just mentioned. Why is that super relevant? Brent, we've been saying for years, knowledge is not limited to actual knowledge. It includes an awareness of a high probability. The challenge of high probability is that the government doesn't have to prove up actual knowledge, but the opportunity for companies of the high probability standard is that it allows you, rather than waiting for Godot, to set your own compliance path, define your own view of your export controls compliance risks, walk that path, and then being able to defend walking that path when invariably, look, there will be mistakes. There will be things that you as a private company, as part of private industry, are not going to be able to detect. There may be things that are just mistakes that you miss. But if you can point to a principled risk-based approach to compliance anchored to this high probability standard, which is what the law says, that's by far the best position you can be in as you try to weather this storm of the affiliates rule over the last couple of weeks, and who knows what else might come out in the next couple of months.
It's important to take a look at this affiliates rule and the impact or non-impact it has on what we're saying in terms of the pre-existing anti-diversion regulations, because this gets lost for a lot of people because they're not focused on it. The pre-existing anti-diversion regulations under the Export Administration Regulations were not impacted by the affiliates rule. Nothing more illustrates this than that July corporate resolution with BIS, which turned on high probability knowledge. Now, the affiliates rule, okay, it extended that automatic entity listing. That's a strict liability issue. That's fairly straightforward. What we're talking about here are these anti-diversion provisions within the EAR that have already been there and were part and parcel of this case that came out at the end of July, which quite frankly is just the edge of a wave that is coming. For compliance teams and companies, this is the time to get your arms around this and understand where your real risks are, where you may have similar issues or similar fact patterns within your business that was in that case. For example, in that case, there was a customer on the entity list. What happened? Then product got shifted to another entity. Then when that entity got put on the entity list, it shifted again. That is already covered under existing EAR anti-diversion provisions. So the affiliates rule has no impact on that at all. If you're not developing and implementing a high probability protocol through your export controls compliance program, that's missing the salt in the stew. That's missing the elephant in the room. But the solution is not that difficult once you know how to understand the risks for your particular company. This is where it comes down to that waiting for Godot moment. If everybody's looking to be BIS for guidance, we need some more clarity. They've actually given it to us in this case and guidance that also has come out this year already. From the government's perspective, they could say, well, what more do you want? We have given you all the clues and the signals for you to go and take and incorporate these into your compliance program.
So Brent, we've talked about already some of the challenges people have spoken about and that we've read about in the press regarding first both the imposition and then secondly the suspension, at least temporarily, of the affiliates rule. And looking at the media attention on this topic, what else have you seen about how people are reacting to this development?
Yeah, I mean, there's a couple things that came out. Number one is just the frustration expressed over the time and resources that were already spent trying to get up to speed and comply with the new affiliates rule, including looking at new technology and software screening tools. Our initial take on that is, look, that time and resources have not been wasted, but they need to be guided by an overall strategic direction, which is what we've been talking about, applying that high probability protocol. So then you have that salt in the stew, you have that spice in the sauce, you have those guiding first principles to the compliance program as it's being enhanced and upgraded, not only for the affiliates rule, which again could snap back any time, or maybe you got the full year on that, but no matter what, as we've talked about from the perspective of the existing anti-diversion provisions in the export administration regulations.
Brent, the importance of the strategy is that what you look at, in what order you look at it, how you distinguish between different sources of data. There's a strategy and there's a somewhat of an art to that. You don't quite know what you're painting as you're diving into a new area like this, but based on the initial experience that your company has had in the first several weeks of the affiliate rule, you probably have a bit of experience that's well documented about some of the challenges in implementing it, and that could be a very reasonable basis on which to then design basically a process to anticipate what you will do when it comes back into play. It could help you design a process for what you do when you do it, and as to which counterparties you do it, more generally related to these anti-diversion provisions, which, as we've just discussed, they were always there, they're still there. So this experience is not a waste of time.
Another theme that has come up is a sense of compliance fatigue, where employees become cynical, viewing the compliance directives as changing and not really grounded in anything. They could just be on again, off again anytime. That's the perception. It erodes that foundation of a compliance and ethical culture within the company. Under the collective knowledge doctrine, the risk is that you've got other people within the company that may not be giving visibility into the compliance function. They're out there running and doing something else, assuming that, oh, this rule is off. Going back to the facts of the case, in that July corporate resolution, which is covered in NYU Law School's Program on Corporate Compliance and Enforcement blog, check it out. It's an article called From Peanuts to Elephant-Sized Penalties, A Fresh Look at Recent U.S. Export Controls Enforcement Developments and Future Trends. In that, I summarize the facts of that case. Use that then to then put together a high probability protocol tailored to your company's risk, and then use that to communicate out to the enterprise and people in it as well. Look, don't pay attention to the daily news cycle, the swings and all that stuff. Quite honestly, a lot of times we've noticed that when we've read stuff, what you see in the press isn't entirely accurate, or doesn't cover all the issues, or doesn't cover the specific details behind the story that would be relevant to your particular company. Use that and address that potential compliance fatigue within the company by going back, looking at that case, develop and implement that high probability protocol, so then you can make and defend those decisions where that's going to be a subjective decision. When BIS enforcement comes in, they're going to look at it and say, well, this has been in the law for decades. How come you don't have it? But if you have that high probability protocol, you can use that to communicate clearly through the enterprise. This is what we're talking about. Don't wait for Godot. Seize control now. Seize the initiative now before the enforcement folks show up at the door, so then you can navigate any potential enforcement issues in the most effective manner.
Brent, the NYU PCCE article that you wrote and that you're just referencing is a great piece, and highly recommend it to anyone listening. It does an excellent job of walking through exactly what were the facts that the government considered to establish, in that case, a reason to know, including an awareness of a high probability of various export controls violations. It is a good roadmap to think about. It's certainly an effective communication tool if you're on the trade compliance team at your company and you're trying to find ways to explain to other stakeholders in the company why this is a risk for them and to the company, to align and get all on the same page about where these risks might come up and how to sincerely and in a substantive way address them.
That high probability protocol is not a one-size-fits-all approach. It is a flexible approach based on a fundamental principle that then is tailored to the risk profile of your individual company. That's where it's got to come together. So again, it's not waiting for some clear black and white guidance that's going to come out of nowhere. That guidance has already been given. In many ways, the government can say that guidance has been given. Now you have to make sure that it's being reflected through the compliance program. But as we've talked about, it need not be a Herculean effort. Just doing a little bit of effort, putting that little bit of salt in the stew, can make it a success.
One of the challenges in trade compliance, among many challenges, is that in some aspects of trade compliance, there is immense precision. Some of the item-based classifications that trigger license requirements are relentlessly scientific, fact-driven, technology-driven. Those are item-based restrictions where people are right to think, well, if the speed limit is 65 miles an hour and I'm going 64, then I'm fine. But it almost requires a different mindset, a different perspective to look at the rest of the export controls, which are there in parallel at the same time as these item-based classifications that don't care if you're going 64 in a 65 mile an hour zone, if you're going the wrong way down a one-way road, or if you're on the wrong road heading to a bad place where bad things are going to happen. For so long, when U.S.-China trade relations started to deteriorate in the first Trump administration, people put so much effort and time into these item-based classifications because that was how the trade competition was first escalated. So people are feeling whipsawed. But again, the good news is that there is a solution. We don't have to wait for the high probability standard to appear. It has already arrived and has been on the books since 1996 and has been part of guidance for the last year and a half. So there is a solution. It's not scientific. It does require a little bit of courage. It does require close collaboration and coordination with your business stakeholders, with your sales team, with your finance team. Not only because they have data points that could actually be helpful, but also because what they know could be harmful if they don't share it with the trade compliance team and then the government starts asking questions.
Another important point here in all this is that this is not an expansion of export controls. These have been existing provisions in the EAR for decades. So again, this is not some new control that just came out. This has been there for a very, very long time. In just over the last year or so, the government has taken it up and now have been sending signals. They're reminding industry, this does not represent an expansion of export controls, but rather it's just keeping up with what is already there.
Well said, Brent. And as always, you and I are both available if anyone wants a shoulder to cry on or wants to have a coffee to talk over. Brent, that leads us to this episode's Managing Up, backed by a rising chorus of demand. What is your Managing Up today?
The good Lord helps those who help themselves. So in these days, don't get stuck waiting for Godot. The answers are not going to come externally. They're going to be found within you. So take action now. Seize control of your own and your company's compliance destiny. How do you do this? Develop and implement a high probability protocol right-sized for your company's risk profile. This will bring compliance clarity to your organization amid the current chaos. And in these times of uncertainty, this is the best and really the only way at this point to protect you, your company, and its officers and directors.
Brent, Waiting for Godot is famous for its openness to many different interpretations. I don't know that Samuel Beckett intended that it would provide solace to those struggling with export controls regulations, but the way you phrase that and the way you say it, I think and hope it has.
Such is the nature of great art.
Brent, that concludes this episode of A Totally Righteous Red Flags Rising. Brent, be well.
Thanks, Mike. Be well. And everyone else out there, be righteous and well.